Hello again and welcome to the fourth episode of Monsters Among Us, a Filipino-Asian true crime podcast. And this is your host, Chachi. Okay, so we're now on our fourth episode and long time no see or hear. I've been on hiatus for months. Our third episode was posted last year, November, and it's February of 2023. So I've been missing for like almost 3 months, and I'm sorry about that. Originally, I was planning to release new episodes weekly, but I find it very hard to do so. So I'm changing the interval of releases to bi-monthly starting this year, and my year always starts in February. January is always my dress rehearsal month, so happy 2023. I decided to do a twice a month release because apparently it really takes a lot of time researching on cases and double checking the facts and the details of the cases I wanted to feature. Although I already know these cases before, but of course, I still want to make sure that what I'm telling you are correct, so I have to read articles or even watch videos multiple times just to be sure. Putting out content in whatever form really is hard, and I salute every content creator out there, especially those who are religiously following their schedule of posting. Hats off to all of you. Anyway, for the very first episode of 2023, we're flying outside the Philippines for the first time. This week's episode has inspired my favorite film, which is directed by Bong Joon-ho. And no, this is not Parasite, but this is his other masterpiece, even before he created Parasite. Today's case is the inspiration, actually, not just inspiration, but this is really about the case. It's Bong Joon-ho's 2003 crime thriller film, Memories of Murder. I first watched this movie for my humanities class, which is reading film, TV, and the internet. This course is about critical reading of films, TV, and the internet from a literary perspective. I took this course during our freshman year and we analyzed a bunch of interesting and beautiful films. And one of them is Bong Joon-ho's Memories of Murder. This film follows the two detectives trying to solve the crimes which took place between 1986 and 1991 in Hwasong Gyeonggi Province in South Korea. This is loosely based on Korea's first confirmed serial murders on the same place during that time. When the film was released, which was on 2003, like I mentioned, the killer hasn't been caught yet, and Director Bong knows that the serial killer will watch the movie because we all know serial killers are narcissists. So in the ending scene, spoiler alert if you haven't watched the film's original setting was between 1986 and 1991, right? The ending scene fast forward to 2003, and one of the detectives, which is Detective Park, who is now retired, happens to pass by the very first crime scene and decides to visit it. There, a little girl mentioned to him that the place was also recently been visited by an unknown man who mentioned that he visited the place because he was reminiscing about what he did in the past on that same place. Of course, Detective Park got curious, so he asked the girl what he looked like, and the girl replied that his face looks ordinary. He just had a quote-unquote normal face. The next scene was when my hair raised. The film ends with a fade out as Detective Park breaks the fourth wall and stares into the lens as if looking for the killer in the audience on the other side of the screen. I suggest you watch the film. I won't be mentioning any scenes from the film anymore, but I'm jumping right into the case connected to the film. Similar to previous episodes, this episode will contain descriptions of scenes that might be sensitive and traumatic to some audience, so listeners' discretion is advised. Our sources are from Naver, NamuWiki, CNN, Korea Times, KBS News, and Wikipedia. Just like any other small town, Hwasong was a place where everyone knows everyone. Before 1986, Hwasong wasn't the sort of place where violent crimes happened. The population of the town was just 226,000 people at that time, and they live in the villages between forested hills and rice paddies. Before the murders, there was no real crimes present in the town, only odd robberies or break-in, but it all changed in 1986 when the Hwasong serial murders started. Hwasong serial murders were a series of rapes and murders that happened between September 15, 1986 and April 3, 1991 in Hwasong, Gyeonggi Province. There are a total of 12 victims from Hwasong and additional two which happened in Cheongju, North Chungcheong Province. The victims were all women and they were found, bound, gagged, raped, and in most cases, strangled to death with their own clothes such as pantyhose or socks. This murder case was the largest criminal case in South Korea. They spent 2 million man days and investigated over 21,000 suspects, but remained unsolved for 30 years after the crime. It all started when Ewan Im, a 71-year-old lady, suddenly disappeared on September 15, 1986, while she was on her way home after visiting her daughter. She stayed overnight at her daughter's house and left early in the morning to sell vegetables she had grown, but then she disappeared. Her body was found 4 days later on September 19, 1986, 2 in the afternoon at Anyongdong Pasture. It was just a 10-minute walk away from her daughter's house. Her estimated time of death was 6:20 p.m. on the night that she was missing. She was killed by strangulation using the killer's hand, and her body was in a state where her bottom clothes were removed, but she wasn't sexually assaulted, and her legs were crossed like an X. Since it's the first murder, although odd because it's the first time to have a serious crime committed in the town, it became a very unfortunate event that happened in Hwasong. The case was handled by the local police, yet no suspects were summoned, and the case remained unsolved. But then, the second murder happened less than a month after Ewan Im's murder. Park Hyun-suk, 25, was found in Jinandong Canal in Hwasong on October 23, 1986 at 2:50 p.m. The owner of the rice field found her hidden in the concrete of the agricultural waterway and reported it. She was naked at the time of discovery and had multiple stab wounds to the chest and back. A stocking was wrapped around her neck and the cause of death was determined to be strangulation. Her murder happened on October 20, 3 days before she was found while she was returning home from Songtan after meeting a prospective marriage partner at 10 p.m. The killer followed her when she got down from the bus and walked along the deserted road. Her clothes were dumped on the bank of the agricultural waterway and traces of rape and semen were found and investigated. But the blood type analysis failed, so instead, the police analyzed milk cartons, cigarette butts, and hair, which were near the clothes that were dumped, and they presumed it to be the killer's stuff. Upon analysis, they determined the suspect to be type B. And you know what? I believe that this move by the police contributed to the mess of the investigations. I mean, how were they so sure that the milk carton, cigarette butts, and hair belonged to the killer? What if it just happened to be there? Which, spoiler alert, those quote-unquote evidences were just there and not the killer's. And this blood type situation really limited their investigation. It's frustrating when you look back at it. Then, the third victim was discovered months after the actual murder. On April 23, 1987 at 2 p.m., the body of a housewife named Kwon Jung-bun, 25, was found at the Anyeondong in an embankment. Her decomposed body was discovered only 50 meters away from her house. Her clothes were removed, her mouth was gagged with her own stockings and girdle, and her bloody underwear covered her face. The estimated time and death of the crime happened at the night of December 12, 1986. That's 132 days before she was found. The body was in a state that it was difficult to perform an autopsy, but a wooden seal engraved with her name was found among her belongings, and they confirmed her identity. Police believe that the perpetrator dragged her to the end of the rice field, undressed her, and gagged her, then sexually assaulted her, and then strangled her with a stocking before hiding the body under a sandbag under the embankment. The fourth murder happened just 2 days after the killer killed his third victim on the night of December 14, 1986. But unlike the third victim, the body of the fourth victim was found a week after the crime. December 21, 1986, at 12:30 noontime, Yi Kye-suk, 23, was found at Cheongnam-myeon, Gwanhangri, a narrow hilltop between the rice fields. Her hands were tied, she was strangled and even violated by an umbrella which she owned. Her face was covered by her girdle, and evidences of being raped was also present because, again, the killer's semen was found on her body. And just like Park Hyun-suk, the second victim, the killer saw her get off from a bus while returning home after meeting a prospective marriage partner. They detect the blood type B again on the crime scene, but it rained on the day on the incident, so it was difficult for them to confirm. Aside from that, the victim's blood type is also B, so they ruled out this result as this wasn't accurate. During this time, we can say that the serial killer already mastered his MO, as he was able to establish his signature in killing, and the killings happened in close dates. As I've mentioned, when the first victim was murdered, it became the responsibility of the local police, and they were tasked to investigate. But after they found the third female, which is actually the fourth victim already at the time, they brought in investigators from a nearby city to help. During this time, the police were convinced that they have a serial killer on the loose. It became a serious case and had the wide media coverage, which made the local residents more afraid. This made the residents form squads and patrol the streets at night, armed with sticks. However, the next murder happened the following year, 1987, less than a month after the fourth crime. On January 11, 1 p.m., the body of a high school girl, aged 19, was found at the rice paddy in Hwanggye-dong. The victim was identified to be Hong Jin-yong, and she was murdered the night before her body was discovered. She was discovered by the owner of the rice field, who was just out to carry rice straws. Again, the killer followed her after getting off from the bus, heading home. The victim's hands were tied with underwear, and unlike other cases where the killer just removes the bottom clothes, Hong Jin-yong was found totally naked. Investigation revealed that the victim had been strangled with a scarf and had signs of sexual assault. The first five murders happened within a 6-kilometer or 3.7-mile radius of Hwasong. This prompted the police to spread out in teams of two. The teams were positioned every 100 meters or 328 feet. However, the next murder happened where there was no police presence. During the investigation, there was a rumor that the killer targeted women wearing red clothes on rainy days. So they made some police officers wear red clothes in an attempt to lure the killer into a trap. Even the residents were desperate that they performed shamanistic rituals on a voodoo scarecrow just to catch the killer. But the killings kept happening. On the night of May 2, 1987, the sixth murder happened. Park Eun-joo, 29, was murdered while she was out to go to her husband to give him his umbrella, but she went missing after that. Her worried husband filed a missing person report 2 days later since his wife still didn't show up. And during a search, the police found the victim's sandals on the rice field right below the bus stop where the victim was last seen. Her body was found on May 9, 3 p.m. at the Jinandong Hill about a week after the disappearance. The ones who found her were children on their way home from school over a mountain, which must be really traumatic for the kids. Just imagine that. The place where she was discovered had a wooden pile next to her and was only 200 meters away from the victim's house. Investigation revealed that there were signs of sexual assault and the cause of death was strangulation. Then, his seventh killing happened in December 24, 1987. 18-year-old Kim Mi-sun was found murdered and sexually assaulted just like the previous victims. There's no record on the exact state she was found. We only knew that her body was discovered on the following year, January 4, 1988. When 1988 came, it seemed like he had a cooling off time because the eighth murder happened months later. At September 8, 1988, at 9:30 in the morning, the body of An Ki-sun, 54, was found in Paltanmyeon, Gacheri Canal. She went missing after helping at a snack bar in downtown Suwon, run by her eldest son, on September 7. She then went home, so her husband was worried that something might have happened to her. As soon as the morning of September 8 came, he searched for her and discovered her full of blood. She was killed the night before. The killer saw her got off the bus while returning home and he decided to kill her. She was raped and strangled, her hands were tied, and was gagged with her own socks and handkerchief. And this time, they found 7 peach slices inside her genitals, so the police were alarmed that the killer was escalating his MO. But the 7th killing also brought a big break into the case. The killer left footprints in the field in the process of leaving the site, and it was confirmed that the footprints continued to the road that was the village bus route. The police also confirmed that he boarded a bus bound for Suwon. At that time, all the buses passing through the bus stop line were investigated, and the bus driver who operated at that time was found. A local bus driver named Kang and bus conductor named who were the driver and conductor of the bus which An Ki-sun took, came forward to provide the police with the description of a man who got off the bus shortly after Ki-sun. They said they were the last bus during the night An Ki-sun was murdered. According to them, they remembered the man because he was acting weird and kept on telling the driver to go faster. They also noticed that he was wet from the rain and his shoes were full of mud. A suspect sketch was drawn based on what they remember. They said that he has a fresh scar on his hand and a dot tattoo on his left wrist, just visible under his watch. When asked how he looked like, they said he was a thin-framed man in his mid-20s with the height between 165 to 170 centimeters, short-cut, sporty-type hair, no double eyelids, and sharp nose. Their description were similar to the descriptions given by the survivors who were sexually assaulted. However, that type of face was very common, which reminds us of the scene in Memories of Murder I mentioned at the start, where the little girl who saw the man said he had a normal face. But still, they now have a face sketch, and I swear, the sketch was so spot on. There's this photo where they put the killer's actual high school graduation photo and the police sketch side, side by side, and it looks totally the same. The bus driver and the conductor actually saw the serial killer. However, they still haven't caught him. The killings continued and the killer got bolder. In the middle of the night at 2 a.m., the killer broke in a house in Jinandong and killed Park Sang-hee, a 14-year-old middle school girl, while she was sleeping in her room. It was after 4 hours when her parents discovered her lifeless body at 6 in the morning when they entered her room. The crime scene had many of the telltale signs similar to the other murders, which is why police linked it to the previous cases. At this time, they found pubic hair evidence at the scene, which led to the police arresting a 22-year-old repairman, Yoon Sang-yo, and was charged with the murder on July 27, 1989. For a moment, the community was relieved because they thought the killer was finally caught. But who is Yoon Sang-yo? As a child, Yoon's family moved around. Yoon said that when he was in his third year at school, his mother passed away in a car accident. And after that, his father disappeared. And Yoon quit school to start working. Yoon came to Hwasong where he begged outside the fried chicken restaurant for a year. And when he was about 11, he began working at the farming tool center. And by 22, was training at the same center to become a qualified technician, and he was still working there when he was arrested for the murder of Park Sang-hee. According to a 1989 report written by an expert at National Forensic Service, the forensic tests of pubic hair samples found at the scene suggested similarities with his, but it's only a 40% match to Yoon Sang-yo's. Even though it's just a 40% match, that was enough for police. After a deeper analysis of the crime scene, however, they concluded that although Yoon had murdered Park Sang-hee, he was not the serial killer as the victim was much younger than the serial killer's victims, and the murder happened inside the victim's home. So the investigators believe that Yoon was a copycat killer. He committed the murder in order to copy the serial killer's M.O. According to police theory, Yoon had gone for a walk on the night of Park Sang-hee's murder. He has polio, so he had to rest often during his walk, and on one of his breaks, he noticed Sang-hee's light was on, and Yoon was suddenly overcome with an, quote-unquote, urge to rape. He broke into her room and attacked her, knowing that her parents were asleep next door. Yoon Sang-yo was tortured for 3 full days, and after this, he finally confessed. He was then convicted and sentenced to life in prison for the murder. He later said that he did not do it. He was innocent, but police were confident that they had the right man behind bars. With no family or money to support his plight, Yoon was pretty much locked away and forgotten. He appealed his conviction, insisting that he was coerced into making a false confession, but his appeal was denied, and he served 19 and a half years in jail before being released on parole in 2009. To the people of Hwasong, it's already a horror that someone was killing their women, mothers, sisters, daughters. But having a copycat killer elevated the sense of panic, and since the true serial killer hasn't been caught, fear has been elevated in the community. However, even during the time of sentencing of Yoon Sang-yo, another murder happened. On July 7, 1989, an 8-year-old girl, Kim Yun-jong, disappeared on her way home from school at 12:30 p.m. And later in December of the same year, the skirt and school bag she was wearing at the time of her disappearance were found only 30 meters away from the site where the will be 11th victim was found. On November 1990, a 14-year-old middle school girl named Kim Mi-jung became the 11th victim. On that day, she was on duty for cleaning the class, so she had to leave school later than the other students, and she went missing while leaving school. Afterwards, a farmer, Mr. John, who was passing by in a truck, witnessed Kim Mi-jung talking to a young man in a navy suit, and that was the last time a witness saw her alive. Kim Mi-jung did not return home until 9 p.m., so her family became very anxious and asked for help from their relatives in Incheon. They stayed up all night searching the surrounding area to find the victim, but in the end, she was found dead the next day. November 16, 1990, 9:50, it was a foggy morning and the person who discovered her was her uncle. What's heartbreaking is that the hill where she was found was always a place where police were deployed at night, and yet the killer was able to snuck and did this devil act. When they found her, she was covered in a school uniform. Her hands and feet were bound with stockings and gagged with her underwear. The autopsy results were shocking as it revealed that aside from being sexually assaulted, she was stabbed 20 times with a stationary knife from the victim's pencil case before strangling him with stockings and uniform. In addition, spoon, fork, and ballpoint pens belonging to her were found in her vagina. In addition, undigested japchae was found in Mi-jung's stomach, which means that the victim was killed within 2 hours of eating the japchae. The problem here is that she packed the japchae for lunch that day, but if she ate that for lunch, it should have been digested a long time ago. But since she had to leave school immediately, she had no time to eat it. Afterwards, it was discovered that the fingerprints of the suspect were found in Mi-jung's lunchbox. And because of this, the police assumed that the killer forced her to eat japchae before killing her. What a sick bastard. Then the 12th and last murder happened on April 3, 1991 at 9 p.m. Kwon Sun-sang, 69, was murdered and sexually assaulted at Dongtanmyeon Bansongri Hill. At the time, Kwon Sun-sang came from her oldest daughter's house in Suwon and was supposed to return home around 6:30 p.m., but she went missing. The next day, 9:30 a.m., a heavy equipment driver who was climbing a field embankment found her dead body and reported it. The victim was found 200 meters away from the house, with her lower clothes removed and black stockings wrapped around her neck, with socks inserted into her genitals. Unlike other cases, she wasn't gagged and her hands weren't tied, and the direct cause of death of the victim was suffocation and not strangulation. So the police suspected at the time that this is another copycat crime. As you can see, even with the 12th victim, catching this killer was still far away from happening as their investigations led them nowhere close to identifying him aside from the sketch they got from the 8th victim. These murders caused a public outcry questioning the efficiency of the police assigned to the cases. This was the very first serial killing in the country, and despite questioning 21,000 persons of interest, no one was ever charged. They gathered 40,000 different fingerprints, 180 hair, and almost 600 people's DNA samples were taken during the investigation. Possible suspects were taken in for questioning without much evidence linking them to the crimes. Their interrogations are very brutal that, according to the reports, at least 4 people who were questioned by the police had taken their own lives because of the brutality. In this case, the only hope were from the eyewitness testimonies. And all testimonies from the surviving sexual assault victims described someone similar to the person described by the bus driver and conductor. Early 20s, tall, lean, short hair, and sharp nose. They said that the man always wore black and his head was always covered either with a cap or a hoodie. In order to narrow down their search, they tried to come up with a profile. They said that the killer was likely from a poor background and suffered abuse at some point in his life, probably from his parents, and because of that, he resented them. This made him harm animals during his childhood as he derived pleasure from their pain. And the brutality of his crimes indicates he was a psychopath. He was both a serial killer and a spree killer. He used a weapon like a knife or a gun to subdue his victims. And his attacks were spontaneous due to the diversity of his victims. Because he had a long cooling time when the police are highly focusing on the cases, it indicates that he had the self-control to stop the murders just to avoid capture. He was updated on the police investigation and enjoyed the fact that they were having a hard time capturing him, which shows that he was a narcissist. Now that they had the profile, were they able to arrest the killer? No. The Hwasong serial murders remained unsolved until 2019. That's almost 30 years after the killings. So how was this Hwasong serial killer caught? 12 years after the last murder in 2003, Bong Joon-ho's Memories of Murder was released, and this sparked a renewed interest towards the unsolved cases, especially when after a year in 2004, a college student was found murdered in Hwasong, which convinced the public the Hwasong serial killer had returned. The police was again pressured to solve the cases as the statute of limitations for these cases was about to run out. At the time, in South Korea, if the killer was not brought to justice within 15 years after a murder was committed, they could no longer be prosecuted. Fast forward to 2006, and they still didn't have anyone in custody for the Hwasong murders. The statute of limitation already ran out, but they were determined to solve the cases, even though these were officially closed already. And then, in July 2019, when police sent evidence from the original case files to the National Forensic Service for DNA testing, a match finally came back. The DNA from 5 of the cases, the murders of Kwon Jong-bon, Lee Kye-suk, Hong Jin-young, An Ki-sun, and Kim Mi-jung, matched someone that is already in police custody. 56-year-old Lee Chun-jae, who was convicted of murdering his 19-year-old sister-in-law in 1994, matched the DNA found in Hwasong serial murders. He was convicted due to a crime not related to Hwasong serial murders, but still, he was convicted because he killed someone. So what exactly happened to Lee Chun-jae after Hwasong serial killings? 2 years after the murders in December 1993, Lee Chun-jae's wife left him because he was abusive. She said that he threw things at her, such as his ashtray. Lee Chun-jae also used to beat their 2-year-old son. She even said that he raped her many times. When she left him, Chun-jae used to send her threats and warned her that he was planning something terrible, a promise which he really kept. A month after his wife left him, Lee Chun-jae invited his sister-in-law in January 1994 to come to his house to give her his ex-wife's belongings. His sister-in-law agreed and stopped by his house. He gave her a drink with sleeping pills. When she was in and out of consciousness, Lee Chun-jae proceeded to rape her. The poor girl struggled to stay awake, and when she's already unconscious, he hit her head with a heavy object, and then he wrapped her in his wife's stockings and other clothes and disposed her body in the yard of a hardware store half a mile away from his home. The following day, Lee Chun-jae still had the audacity to visit his ex-wife's family home and pretended that he's there to help them on the farm. Since Chun-jae was already there, His in-laws told him that their youngest daughter did not come home from the night before, and he even agreed to accompany his father-in-law to the police station to report her missing. They believed that she had been abducted, so they started searching vicinities to look for her. Yi Chun-jae, being the psychopath and narcissist that he is, volunteered to join the search. They eventually found her wrapped in a blue tarp, hidden in the snow-covered and used garage of a hardware store. Her head was covered with her jeans and a plastic bag, and her hands were tied behind her back with her own underwear. Of course, they called in the police, and the police questioned the family members and friends, hoping to gain more information about her last movements. Police discovered that her phone records showed that Yi Chun-jae called her the afternoon before she disappeared. So they went to Chun-jae's house and found blood on his washing machine, which matched the victim's. What added to their suspicion is that Yi Chun-jae asked someone how many years one would serve for rape and murder. With these evidences at hand, he was arrested 5 days after the murder. He pleaded not guilty, and he managed to convince the court that investigators had forced him into confessing. It even took them 3 trials to convict him. During these trials, his employers, prison guards, and family members testified that Yi Chun-jae was well-mannered and kind, contrary to what his wife was saying that he was violent. On the 3rd trial, Yi Chun-jae finally confessed that he killed his sister-in-law, but claimed that it was an accident. According to him, his sister-in-law went to his house and insulted him, talking about how he was a failure as a husband to her sister. He then snapped and attacked her in a fit of rage. But the court wasn't convinced, since he was the one who invited her to his home and drugged her. The court believed that the crime was premeditated, and he was found guilty and sentenced to death in May 1994. However, the next year in 1995, the court reviewed his case and reduced his sentence to life imprisonment, which has the possibility of parole in 20 years. And finally, on September 18 of 2019, Yi Chun-jae was confirmed to be the killer of the Hwasong murders. He initially denied that he had something to do with the unsolved murders, but on October 2, 2019, he finally confessed to the Hwasong serial murders. He even drew a map and marked the spots where he had left the bodies of his murder victims. He wrote a note on the map which says, "Murder, 12 plus 2, rape, 19, and attempted, 15. Aside from the recorded 12 murders in Hwasong, he also confessed to the murders of Park Mo-young in January 21, 1991, and Lee Mo in June 24, 1992. Park Mo-young was a 17-year-old student who was murdered at a housing construction site in Cheongju, while Lee Mo was a housewife who was also murdered and sexually assaulted, just like in the Hwasong serial murders. 15 victims in total, including his sister-in-law. We know that these killers have excellent memory when it comes to the crimes they commit, and the same thing goes with Yi Chun-jae. He even corrected the police if they got the facts wrong. He said he usually committed the crimes between 9 and 10 p.m. after his work while he was on his way home. On November 15, the same year, the police officials declared that he is the Hwasong serial killer, but because the statute of limitations had already expired, he was not charged for his crimes. Finally, the 33-year-old cold case was closed. What's crazy is that he was one of those 21,000 people questioned by the police, and he even said that during the time when they questioned him, he had a watch of one of his victims in his pocket. The officer only asked for identification, and that was all he showed. He said that he was surprised he was not caught sooner. Remember the time when they thought that the suspect's blood type is B? guess what? Yichun-je's blood type is O, which probably one of the reasons he was excluded as a suspect early on. The police followed a detail which is not even a conclusive evidence because, surprise, the actual suspect is far from type B. Remember also Yoon Sang-yeol, who was convicted for Park Sang-hee's murder? He finally went on retrial in 2020 and Lee Chun-jae stood as a witness, confessing that he's the real killer, even detailing what happened the night he killed the poor 14-year-old girl. When asked why he killed her, he plainly stated that it was just an impulsive act. What an asshole, right? Yoon was finally acquitted of murder on December 17, 2020, after the retrial court accepted that he was innocent all along and finding Lee guilty of Sang-hee's murder despite the expiration of the statute of limitations. You might ask, who is Lee Chun-jae and what pushed him to commit such horrible crimes? Lee Chun-jae was born on January 31, 1963, was a local in Hwasong. Their family was poor, but people around him described him as a good and shy kid. They said he was polite and to neighbors, bright and reserved, and he basically lived his whole life at Hwasong. It is said that his sister drowned when he was young and died as a result. This event left a big impact on him, and he even claimed that he was abused by an older sibling. After graduating from high school in 1983, he joined the military and spent 3 years as a tank pilot. During this time, he had a personality shift. He became confident and showed leadership skills. When he was discharged from the military, the source of his confidence was gone. Now that he was out, he felt aimless and bored. This quote-unquote boredom apparently led him to his first sexual offense, a rape, on the February during the year he was discharged. His second to fifth offenses happened with just a month interval, and then his sixth to eighth offenses were only a week apart before he escalated to murder in 1986. He was able to provide the authorities with the exact information on each of those offenses when he was questioned about it. He then continued to live his double life and worked as a forklift driver. In September 1989, a month after he murdered the 8-year-old girl Kim Yun-jong in July 7, 1989, he was put to prison after a man reported that Lee Chun-jae intruded his house. He was then charged with robbery and was released in April of 1990. Since he was in prison, there was no murders happened during this time. His next crime was Kim Mi-jung's murder in November 1990, his 11th Hwasong murder. When he was released, he needed to find a job and found employment as a crane driver in Cheongpa, Yongsan. He found another work also as a crane driver for a company in Cheongju. That's when he met his wife, who worked as an accountant at the same company, and they got married in April 1992. But in March 1993, Lee Chun-jae and his wife both lost their jobs when the company they worked for closed, and his wife worked part-time jobs and was the one supporting the family. During this time, he did not return to Hwasong, and there were no more killings there. The killings moved to Cheongju, and he had two victims. So what happened to Lee Chun-jae now? He remained incarcerated, serving his life sentence. Surprisingly, he said that he was remorseful and was sorry for the people who was wrongfully accused. He said that he wants to apologize to the victims' families and he'll live his life repenting on his sins. But personally, I don't buy it. It took him 30 years to confess to the murders, and since he was already caught, he's just saying that he's sorry. But psychopaths like him don't feel remorse. He started raping and killing people just because he was bored and had lack of purpose in life. A normal person certainly won't commit crimes just because of boredom. I feel sorry for the victims and the people who were wrongfully accused, and it took them 30 years to finally have a closure, which is not really a closure because the statute of limitations had already expired and Lee Chun-jae didn't even receive punishment on the murders he committed. Justice wasn't served, but I'm wishing that finally knowing the killer and knowing that he is serving life in prison would somehow give them a little bit of peace. In this episode, we remember Lee Wan-im, Park Hyun-suk, Kwon Jung-bon, Lee Kye-suk, Hong Jin-young, Park Eun-joo, Kim Mi-sun, An Ki-sun, Park Sang-hee, Kim Yun-jong, Kim Mi-jong, Kwon Sun-sang, Park Mo-yang, Lee Mo, Lee Chun-jae's sister-in-law, who wasn't named, unfortunately, and the 30-plus other victims. And that ends today's episode. If you like this episode, please rate and make sure to subscribe and click the follow button. This podcast is available in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Please also follow our Instagram and Twitter accounts for updates on the next episodes. If there's a case you want me to cover, you can email me at monstersamongus2022@gmail.com. Thank you for listening and see you on the next episode for another true crime story. Bye!